Hey there, it's your friend Ryan Reed with Reed and Reed. I'll get you right back to your favorite podcast, but quickly, I want you to know if you're injured in a car accident, slip and fall, or through medical malpractice, you can count on Reed and Reed to be here when you call. You'll speak to me, my wife, or my dad directly on the phone, or you can meet us in person or on Zoom for a free consultation. Visit needreed.com today for more information. And remember, with Reed and Reed, it's like having a lawyer in the family. Needreed.com. Offices, Tampa Bay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the inaugural broadcast of 411's Ground and Pound Radio, something we here at 411 are very excited about. We want to welcome you to the show. Hope you'll stay with us for the next hour. If you would like to call into the show, the number is 323-657-0901. Again, the call-in number is 323-657-0901. We will be giving that number out all hour. And we are taking your calls on the Fedor Silva fight. We will be taking your calls on Strikeforce and what's happening with them over the next couple of months. We're going to be talking about the UFC 127 event this Saturday, Penn versus Fitch. So we'll highlight that and talk about what's going on for that fight. We'll take your calls on that as well. And we are going to recap for you the Strikeforce Challengers event that I provided live coverage for. So we'll take your calls on all of the above. Plus, we're going to look at the next event on HDNet Fights. And if you have general questions, comments, things you've put on the board that you want some more follow-up on, we're going to address all of those things too, plus what's coming up this week on the 411 MMA Zone. So before we get into the whole show, and we're going to bring some people on from the 411 MMA Zone, we're going to have Scott Kuczewski on, we're going to have Samer Caddy on, you know, to talk about what's going on in MMA. But before we get to all of that, I just want to quick give a shout out and talk a little bit about something I went to last night. I got to check out, I guess, what Dana White would refer to as a feeder show. It was a local pro promotion called Art of Fighting, and they got to do an event at the State Florida Fairgrounds here in Tampa, which was fun. I got to take my wife and my daughter, and we hung out, and guys from the gym that I had been working out at and kind of took a break from, changed gyms, and went somewhere else, were there. They were part of a grappling tournament, and then they had one of their fighters fight in the main event for a WFO light heavyweight title against Buddy Roberts. So I went there to support them, support the show, just kind of check it out, and got to expose my little girl to her first live MMA experience. And, you know, I just want to say, first of all, Art of Fighting put on a really good show. For somebody who's gone to a lot of indie band shows, you know, shows from, you know, the people played in their backyard to garages to small venues, et cetera, gone to see independent wrestling shows. And some are great. Some are run pretty poorly. You know, so there's always a good story that comes out of any time you go to see anything that is prefaced with an indie. But I got to say, Art of Fighting put on a pretty good production. And, again, I want to give a shout-out to Highlander MMA and C.T. Turner. C.T. Turner put on a 5-round war last night with Buddy, and you know, he didn't win. He lost by decision. You know, but he as much as this guy tried, he couldn't finish CT, and CT really displayed his excellent Brazilian jiu-jitsu acumen. So I want to say congrats to him for even getting in there and getting, you know, that close. It was a good pro fight for him, and I'm hoping CT bounces back from that loss, you know, to come back stronger. Maybe we'll see him in one of the big three, you know, Bellator, Strikeforce, UFC, etc. But last night, minor setback. I think he'll bounce back great. So good job, CT. Good job, Highlander MMA. All right. That being said, you guys are out there listening. You know, you want to hear about Strikeforce and Fedor versus Silva. So let's get to it. First, I want to bring on from 411's MMA Zone. He writes a view from the cheap seats. He is Scott Kuzowski. Kuzowski. How am I saying that?
Scott Kuchkowski. I mean, it's really close with a name like that. I've experienced 30 plus years of people not, you know, getting it correct. So, not that big of a deal. Not that big of a deal at all.
With a last name like Radulich, I feel your pain.
I'm sure you do.
And he writes the other fantastic column on 411 MMA. He is the author of the Rear Naked column, Samer Kadi. How you doing, Samer?
Hey, I'm well. How are you guys?
Glad you guys could be with me on the show. Certainly makes it easier when I have other people to talk to. All right, so I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get right to business. We all watched the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix inaugural event, Fedor versus Silva, last Saturday. So we've had a week to digest this. The whole week pretty much was dedicated to, you know, to dissecting this event and what's going on with Fedor. Scott, I want to hear your reactions first. We go from the second round, we start to go into the third round, and all of a sudden it stopped. The doctor says, that's it, enough. What were your thoughts at that point?
Honestly, I really, at that point, I figured MMA, at least in the heavyweight division, has gotten to the point where now it is starting to reach Fedor's level, his skill level, and for some fighters actually eclipse it. And we've probably also seen the point now in MMA, at least in the heavyweight level, where size does matter, where a monstrous guy such as Bigfoot Silva, who is extremely skilled, is going to be able to hold down and really dominate Fedor. And I just really think that we focus so much on, you know, what this loss means for Fedor, but I think as a whole, what it means for the entire heavyweight division is it's really starting to move forward at a much faster pace than many people probably, you know, ever expected to see happen. I mean, for the longest time, Fedor has been the measuring stick for greatness. And if you could even go to a decision with him, I mean, that really meant something. I mean, for a while, it was if you could get out of the first round with him, that was great. But I think now we are seeing where the entire heavyweight division is really starting to catch up with him and in some ways eclipse him.
When you say they're starting to catch up with him, because one of the things that I've noticed, and Samer, I'm going to have you weigh in on this as well with your first thoughts. One of the things that I've noticed, and I was talking about this last night with a buddy of mine as we watched the show, is how far boxing striking, Muay Thai striking, has come in MMA. Because if you look at the early stuff, it's a lot of, and this is kind of what I think of when I look at Fedor's fights, it's wild haymakers. You know, it's just swinging for the fences, nothing set up. The jab is as almost extinct as the dodo. And it's become a point now where, you know, Alistair Overeem, and some would say he's untested, but I would say he's probably one of the best heavyweights out there. And if you don't want to go with Alistair, we can go with Dos Santos, because these guys are such superior boxers. And when you match that up with the grappling, you know, with the jiu-jitsu, you know, you have guys who can get in there you know, and then can, you know, like a Frankie Edgar kind of, you know, float in, float out, float in, circle, circle, set up strikes, and then you utilize their takedowns that way, as opposed to wild rush, wild haymakers, you know, and maybe you tackle somebody, maybe you don't. Especially with the heavyweight guys, they tend to do more, stay on their feet more than they do grapple. But when they do, it's again, it's just wild haymakers. So what I'm, where I was going with that was, or where I want you guys to weigh in, when you say that the heavyweight divisions have sort of eclipsed Fedor, would you say that's because the striking has evolved? I'm going to go throw that one to you, Samer.
Well, I think it's a multitude of reasons, including the striking. Well, Fedor, he's always been efficient with his striking, but it's never been technical. I mean, it's not beyond reproach just because he's Fedor. He's always had this knack of throwing these loopy punches, and that's one of the reasons why he broke his hand so much. I mean, he almost never emerges out of a fight, win or lose. He almost never emerges out of a fight with no injuries. That's because the moment his punches actually connect, they're not connecting properly. He's like, he has this shogun thing where they connect from almost like his palm or like the inside of his hand. It's very weird. And that's because they're so loopy. So, and Silva, I thought he did well of counter-punching. He had the reach. He threw straight punches. But what Fedor has always been efficient at is throwing combinations, especially for a heavyweight. You bring up the striking in the heavyweight division, and you're absolutely right. That's why a guy like Junior Dos Santos, for example, has been able to make strides, because how many people throw punches like Junior Dos Santos with so many combinations? I mean, Dos Santos is probably a little more diverse with his striking than Fedor, a little more technical. He has uppercuts, hooks, as opposed to, like, you know, the usual loopy striking. But he has the speed, he has the combinations, and that's why Fedor has been efficient. But it was always going to bite him in the ass, in my opinion, because that's not the way to go, and it's not good for longevity. I mean, once you get older, slower, you're going to be less efficient. I mean, to his credit, I think he's improved his knockout power. If you look at earlier in his career, he wasn't, like, melting guys' faces with overhand rights the way he did to Orlovsky or Brett Rogers, for example. But technically speaking, yeah, you're absolutely right, and it's not diverse enough. I mean, he rarely uses kicks or knees in the clinch. So, yeah, it was a surprising loss for sure, but nothing too shocking considering the manner in which it happened. And then you bring up the takedowns, and yeah, I mean, Silva's a big guy, and he has an absolutely great top game, for especially for a guy that big. And Fedor never had great takedown defense to begin with, so I'd say it was surreal to see him dominated like that, yes, and that was my initial reaction, especially in the second round. I mean, since when do we even consider Fedor losing a 10-8 round? But at the end of the day, the manner in which it happened, yes, surreal, but not too shocking. I'd compare it to Silva versus Chael Sonnen in the sense that, because Anderson Silva also never had great takedown defense, so yeah, it was also surreal to see Chael dominate him the way he did, but at the same time, yeah, Chael Sonnen is a great wrestler with good ground and pound, and Silva doesn't have great takedown defense. So, I mean, you know, it was about to happen, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I had the same sick feeling in the pit of my stomach right before the Fedor fight started that I had right before the last two Brock Lesnar fights. You know, you guys know I'm a big fan of Brock Lesnar. I came from wrestling and kind of stopped watching wrestling for the most part and really fell in love with MMA. But I'm one of those Brock Lesnar crossovers, and so I really liked this guy and I followed him. And while I don't think he's the most talented guy on the planet, he's the most interesting and one of the more marketable guys, obviously. But I watched him come out against Carwin, and I watched him come out against Velasquez, and I just turned to my wife and I said, this is going to go badly. And Saturday night, it happened again. I'm like, I was fine. I was excited for this fight. I turned and I looked at her and I went, this is going to get ugly. And sure enough, it did. So going back to you, Scott, you know, you had said it had eclipsed him, and I just wanted you to sort of finish your point with what we've brought up here as far as the striking and his. And I want to add this one element to it, which will lead me into the next bit. It doesn't seem like he's had an opportunity to be tested by his coaches. You know, it seems like there's a lot of yes men, a lot of, you're doing just fine the way you are. Everything is fine. I compare Fedor to Brock Lesnar in that sense, where everyone around him is just saying, yes, you're perfect just the way you are. Don't change a thing. And you can't do that and then expect to be expect to continue to have an effective game against guys who are evolving, who are taking in new pieces of knowledge, new abilities. Not to mention the fact that even your good stuff, you know, the things you're not changing just wears down over time. I'm going to let you respond to that.
Well, I've really always considered Fedor pretty much a fighting prodigy. From the first fights that I saw him fight in Pride, he has natural balance and a wherewithal within the ring and the octagon, the ring and the cage that I don't think it's really anything that he's learned. I mean, when we call BJ Penn the prodigy, but I actually think Fedor is probably more so of a fighting prodigy than probably anybody else I've ever seen in MMA. And I don't know if you've ever watched musical prodigies or these young kids that, you know, are outstanding at something. When they are doing the one thing that they are, you know, just blessed, you know, with the skill to do, they have that look on their face of just a complete lack of emotion because they're just doing something that comes natural to them. And I've always thought that about Fedor. You know, people have always called him stoic, but honestly, you know, I think he's just going in there and he's doing what is very, very natural to him. And I honestly don't think he's one of those guys that they get into the gym a lot. I don't think, frankly, because he's probably never had to. I'm sure he goes in there and he has sharpened up a lot of things, and maybe at times he has, you know, practiced some stuff, and more so out of obligation for his craft, but probably not because he absolutely loves it. And I think for the majority of his career, I mean, really up until his last couple of fights, that has carried him along just fine, this natural ability that could never ever be taught to anybody else. But, you know, now we are saying that he's being figured out. I mean, the reality is that even the toughest puzzle in the world eventually is going to be figured out. And, you know, Joe Rogan has said it before, iron sharpens iron. So who is this guy training with? You know, you mentioned, are his handlers probably telling him, yeah, everything's fine? Yeah, I'm sure they are. And up until he fought Werdum, they were right to tell him that. I mean, the guy had never seen any defeat. He'd never seen any type of, you know, adversity. I mean, yeah, there were times that he'd get caught, and, you know, but he would recover and he'd be fine, and, you know, there was always somebody that was supposed to be a bigger, better challenge, but he always managed to walk through everything, and his raw talent and his just God-given skill carried him through it all. Now it's not enough. The reality is, and it's an unfortunate reality, is it might not ever be enough again. And he might not be the type of person, because nobody knows him. I mean, nobody really knows what he deals with in his life. I mean, you know, they talk about he likes to train, you know, in seclusion, comes from a small town and stuff like that. But the guy's been divorced. He's got a brother who's been in some trouble before. So to think that he goes and lives in seclusion in some stress-free environment is, I mean, it's illogical. He's got a family. He's got things that probably weigh on his mind. We always,
not to mention people,
you know,
sometimes just don't want to do this anymore. You know, you've been doing it for a while. Even, you know, Manny Pacquiao, one of the best boxers on the planet right now, is getting close to the point where he doesn't want to do this anymore. So that's certainly something that I'm sure plays in, that's an element in his, in how he's fighting and his decision making.
And we assume Fedor's set for life, you know, with money, but we also thought that about Mike Tyson. And,
right,
you know, look where that is. You know, I mean, but it's true. It's one of those things that, you know, he is such a recluse. You know, even almost, I mean, him and Brock Lesnar should be neighbors or roommates or something like that.
Yeah, I've often said him and Brock Lesnar
should
go bowling.
So reclusive, but nobody really knows where he's at. I don't think you're going to see him change his style. I don't think it's in him. I think he could learn some new elements. I honestly don't think you'll see him dropping weight because I don't think that's what he wants to do. I don't think he'll have any interest in trying to drop weight because why? You know, I mean, I don't think it's just something that's going to interest him, and I don't know. You know, do I think he could still win fights? Absolutely. I think there's still plenty of fighters out there that he can beat. But when you get to guys like, you know, Antonio Silva, I'd throw, you know, Cain Velasquez in there, and a number of UFC heavyweights. Alistair Overeem, I think those are fights that he's just not going to win.
Right. I would absolutely agree with that. I want to share with you guys really quick this article that I found by Kenny Rice from Inside MMA. He entitled it, "The Emperor Needs a New Wardrobe, The Pampering of Fedor." And there were some really striking passages in this. I'm going to read a couple of them to you and get your reactions. "The Emperor isn't wearing any clothes. For years now, Fedor Emelianenko has paraded through the streets of the MMA world as if nothing is wrong, perceived as the lone searcher of someone suitable, a mythical warrior, contemplating a chosen one to tussle with in his highness of the sport. After being stripped of his prowess, exposed for a second straight defeat, it is time to point out the bare truth. Fedor has been pampered. Ironically, this is true. This true tough man from a lonely Russian outpost has been too guarded by those around him, and it is glaring. Strategically choosing opponents marketed perfectly to mask flaws in his game and reliant on the undying reverence of his fans and media since winning the Pride Heavyweight Championship in 2003 over Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira and taking their Heavyweight Grand Prix the next year, a real course for a real champ was only a facade as it has unfolded. M1 Global protected him better or worse than Colonel Tom Parker did Elvis, sheltering him from reality with matchups against Mark Hunt, Mark Coleman, Matt Lindland, all quality fighters, but not the UFC caliber that the Times called for such a great champion to engage. For them, coming to America with an Eddie Murphy movie, not recognition of where the rest of the best fighters in the world had landed. They eventually made it on their own terms, of course. In the meantime, instead of getting a deal done to fight Randy Couture, he stayed around Japan more content for a circus-like show versus Hanman Choi. His management defended it all by noting that Emelianenko eventually returned to the States. He had fought Coleman in Las Vegas once and beat two former UFC champs, Tim Sylvia and Andrei Arlovski, and both were on the downside of their careers." This goes on, but that's pretty much his point, is that these guys, you know, that this is Fedor is Rocky circa Rocky III. So, you know, he's just being fed guys to keep the championship on him and to, you know, to continue his allure as the unbeatable champion. But had he gotten in there with somebody who could have really tested him, the story would have been written differently. Your thoughts, Samer?
Well, I mean, there's obviously a lot of truth in that. I mean, everybody knows that Fedor hasn't fought the best of heavyweights out there consistently. I mean, he mentioned some guys. Matt Lindland is actually a middleweight, Hanman Choi, and the list goes on and on. Even back in his Pride days, Zulu Zinho and the like. So, yeah, there's obviously, he has a point there. And also, yeah, we all know M1 didn't handle Fedor's career in the most, I'd say, appropriate manner, to say the least. But he's slightly exaggerating at some points, in my opinion, saying that he took fights to protect him. I'd say maybe towards the tail end of his career with the last fight, like the Verdum fight, instead of fighting Alistair Overeem, he fought Verdum, who everybody thought was like tailor-made for Fedor's style. So I guess, yeah, he might have a point there. But outside of that, I mean, really, if Fedor had signed with the UFC back in 2007, does anybody really think Fedor wouldn't have ruled over that division? Who was there in the UFC that could have beaten him? I mean, Randy Couture, maybe. Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, whom Fedor defeated twice. Nobody. Tim Sylvia, who he later destroyed. Andrei Arlovski. I mean, he would have definitely became UFC champion in 2007, in my opinion. And then at Affliction, I mean, Andrei Arlovski was definitely the best guy they've had. And he was about to fight Josh Barnett before the whole steroid thing. So I wouldn't say he handpicked his opponents until maybe his strike force run. So, yeah, I mean, I would have definitely liked to see Fedor tested more often, because part of the reason why we get so excited when we see him fight like a quality heavyweight is because it doesn't happen very often. I mean, basically, between 2005 when he defeated Mirko Krokop until he finally fought Tim Sylvia, that's like a 3-year span where we didn't see Fedor fight a legitimate heavyweight. So, yeah, he has a point, but I think the article is, ultimately, it's kind of, I wouldn't say biased, but maybe it's hyperbolic.
Okay. I always like to compare Fedor to Comet. Brilliant when he comes around, but he only comes around once every so often. I think one of the features coming out this week is the 401 heavyweight rankings. Which, what day does that usually come out? When we do the rankings column.
I think it's a Tuesday.
Okay.
Tuesday.
So yeah, we'll go with that, Tuesday. This Tuesday is the date is the 401 MMA rankings, and I'll for the heavyweights. And I, part of my rationale, and I talked about this in, throughout the week, was, and I believe I actually brought it up in the Fact of Fiction, the man only fought once in 2010, and he didn't fight that much before that. And I'm like, you know, for you to be active, for you to be in the top, you know, 5, 6, 7 guys, I think you need to be a little bit more active than once a year. And certainly, if you're going to do that, at least you have to win. So it was hard for me to really focus on him as sort of a top tier heavyweight. To me, he's like, you know, like, I don't want to say Herschel Walker and say that the two are comparable, but they say Herschel Walker is not a real fighter as much as he's a feature fighter. That was kind of the way Fedor was going with the lack of fighting that was going on. But your reaction to the article, Scott?
You know, Kenny Rice talked about this on Inside MMA. He paraphrased his article. He goes ahead and says that, you know, and I have tremendous respect for Fedor. The entire time he went undefeated, he should have at least lost by accident, as most fighters probably would have. Okay, and he never did. And, you know, we point out that he faced guys like Hongmen Choi and Mark Hunt, but you know, then you got to ask yourself, does that diminish the fact that he mauled Big Nog and Krokop those times, you know, and has really been nearly untouched? I mean, you can only fight, you know, who you're put in the cage against. The fact is that if you're not in the UFC, you're not going to fight UFC fighters. Okay, so, I mean, you know, and I understand where Kenny Rice is coming from. Was Tim Sylvia probably on the downside of his career? Yeah, I think we can look back at that now and say, yeah, he obviously was. But at that point, nobody really knew. I mean, they knew that this was really a big guy with some decent striking, a former UFC champion. And granted, he was never a great champion, you know, and he is coming off 2 losses. But there was the potential that he could give Fedor some problems. Fedor completely mangled him and, you know, walked through Sylvia. And in my mind, that was probably more of a testament to, I would say that was more of a testament to Fedor's dominance, you know, his ability to recognize that he could just blitz Sylvia and finish him, and that was good. The Arlovski one, you know, is kind of a strange win. You know, Arlovski really made him look vulnerable for the first couple of minutes, and then, you know, Fedor just waited for that one moment to land his punch, and that was it. You know, obviously, we all look at Arlovski, and we just, you know, we see this guy that is a former, he's a shell of the fighter that he once was. So it's very easy to minimize his, you know, that win. However, Arlovski at that point was on a 5-fight winning streak. And he with a win over Werdum and Roy Nelson and Ben Rothwell. So, does the fact that he hasn't won since then really minimize, you know, Fedor's, you know, win? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I understand where Kenny Rice is coming from. And it's always simple to say, oh, yeah, well, you know, look, Fedor was pampered. Who else would he have fought in Pride? Okay, they couldn't keep putting him up against, you know, Antonio Nogueira at every pay-per-view. You know, they couldn't keep having him face Miracle Krokop again and again. Outside
that's
of those
point.
Two
you know,
names,
you fight the competition in the promotion that's there. You know, they don't.
I mean,
Dos Santos.
Yeah, who would have been the top? Who would have been, you know, outside of Krokop though and Nogueira, who would have been, you know, top fighters in Pride for him to face? Yes, they always wanted to face Josh Barnett, but, you know, there were always issues with that. You know, and the reality is, for as good as Pride's heavyweight division was, you know, the top guys were Krokop, Nogueira, and Fedor. He beat the two guys that were the best. Mark Coleman, he beat him when he was really good, and then everybody else was just, like, you know, people that they wanted to throw in there to see how they did.
No. And I agree with you. I don't think you can discount his legacy up to this point. You can make an argument that you can make the argument, we could argue this for the next 4 hours if we wanted to, over his relevance in modern MMA, but up to this point, I don't think, and I've said this before, you can't take away what he's accomplished. So my question to you guys going forward is, there's been some debate about this, and I wanted to make sure we cover this very, very quickly. There was some debate about, and people are still asking questions. It was put to Scott Coker on the MMA Hour a few times. Should the fight have been stopped in the first place? The argument goes something like this. It looked like he couldn't see out of one eye. The doctors checked it. They were afraid his orbital bone was broken, and they said for the protection, you know, he was ready to go. He was going to go in there. This is why I don't take anything away from Fedor. How many of us who can't see out of one eye are going to go fight a giant? So, but he was going to do it. He was going to go for a third round. People say that if he had, that Silva was gassed, Silva was probably not going to win that next round. They know that this was going to be Fedor's round, and if that had happened, he'd have won. But the doctor stopped it because they were afraid his orbital bone was broken and he couldn't see. And then it turns out his orbital bone was not broken. So people are saying, well, they should never have stopped the fight then. You know, they should have given him, they should have gone with the fighter's wishes and just let him fight if they weren't clear. On the MMA Underground, there was a doctor, a person who identified himself as a doctor, that wrote the following. He said, contrary to the beliefs of numerous medical doctors, quote, who are only licensed to practice on the internet, here's what the doctors in attendance could ascertain about his injury. The soft tissue around the eye was seriously damaged. The fighter could not adequately see out of the right eye. There was a high index of suspicion for underlying bony damage. The eyeball globe itself and its delicate internal structures could not adequately be examined cage side and might have sustained significant damage, et cetera, et cetera. Your guys' opinion? Right to stop the fight? Not right to stop the fight?
I'm personally fine either way. I mean, we've seen fights continue, like Josh Koscheck most recently, who turned out to have a broken orbital. At the end of the day, if you're gonna let it up to the fighter or his camp, they're gonna continue in most cases. I mean, let's face it, these are fighters. These aren't like your average human being. So as long as he can throw a punch, he's gonna continue fighting because he's always one punch away from winning the fight. And, well, Fedor Emelianenko can be many things, but he's not a quitter. So he was always going to continue fighting if the decision was actually up to him. The doctor, I mean, his eye was mashed up pretty badly. So I'm fine either way. I think it was an appropriate stoppage. I definitely don't think he would have won the fight. No chance. I think Antonio Silva would have taken him down again and basically, do the whole thing all over again. So I'm fine if we had continued. Maybe he'd suffer worse injuries. So I can understand why it was stopped. I mean, we see it in boxing all the time. In Pacquiao's fight, I want to say against Miguel Cotto, but I might be wrong, he completely destroyed him. The guy could barely see, and he just, went on fighting because that's what fighters do. So, I don't know.
This was the last Pacquiao fight. It was Margarito, and yeah, Margarito's eye, Koscheck's eye, and Fedor's eye all look the same.
Absolutely. There you go. So, yeah, I mean, he would have probably continued, but, I don't think there was any point to do so. He wasn't going to win the fight, I mean, or at least the chances were very, very slim. So for the sake of safety, I think it was a pretty decent stoppage, in my opinion.
Okay, Scott, real quick.
Same thing. I mean, yeah. You had to know that but the opening, at the first minute of round three, Antonio Silva was going to get that fight back to the ground, and it was going to be, basically just a continuance of what happened in round two. And I think it was a really good stoppage. It's unfair to compare that stoppage to, the fact that Josh Koscheck was allowed to continue fighting because just a very, very different circumstances. The Josh Koscheck fight, I imagine if George St. Pierre had been 40 pounds bigger than Josh Koscheck and had, been mounting him and punching him in the face for the majority of that fight, they probably would have stopped it. As it was, though, the fight was, predominantly on the feet, and the reality is Koscheck's eye, while it did swell, didn't swell close until really the end of the fight. So I think it's unfair to compare that, and I think the doctor did the right thing. When you look at the pictures, you can see that his eye was swollen shut, and while Fedor probably would have gone out there and valiantly fought, I mean, You've also got to think, while it's a tournament and all that, and obviously every fight's important, it's not worth him risking permanent damage, or at least damage that's going to keep him out for the rest of the year.
Right. Just to close out this subject, and I want to move on to some of the other business that we're going to talk about in the show. I want to transition into Friday night Strikeforce Challenger show, and you can't talk about Strikeforce Challengers without discussing how Strikeforce promotes their events. So I want to get to that, but we can talk about the fighters, and I think you hear some of the comments on the board, which if you're out there and you want to weigh in, the phone number is 323-657-0901. But you see a lot of the comments, and they're very disrespectful to the fighters, and it's, you know, this guy's a can, and this guy's over the hill, and this guy's a piece of crap, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and I don't like to do that. You know, it takes a lot of balls to get inside, you know, a ring or a cage or a mat and, you know, put your body on the line and fight another human being. And so, you know, unless you're just out there on drugs, I don't like to talk bad about the fighters. Managers, coaches, promoters are a whole other story. And I'll tell you what, M1 and the guys around Fedor get the award so far this year for funniest excuses ever. Have you heard some of these? They're all over now. Where I first got them from was MMAfighting.com. One of his trainers, Vladimir Voronov, claimed in Russian media that psychological warfare was used, hypnosis, as a matter of fact. The other one was that Silva's on steroids. In fact, they went on to say that everybody's on steroids in American MMA, and Fedor is the only one who's clean. Ridiculous.
I'm just
curious if you guys had either heard these or what your reaction to that was. I didn't have to spend too much time on it, but I saw the hypnosis one, and I happened to have taken a break at work, and I was reading it on my iPad, and I almost had to like muffle my voice so I wouldn't laugh so loud the next cubicle could hear me.
Oh yeah, I heard about it on Twitter. I think it was Steve Caulfield who tweeted the link. And well, yeah, I mean you can't take that any seriously, obviously enough. And no, I like the usage of the word illegal. You know, as though there was somewhere in the unified rules that specify you can't illegally use hypnosis on your opponent or something. So yeah, no, it's obviously it's ridiculous. I mean, there's no point in even debating this.
Now, whether or not M1's gonna, you know, has ruined his legacy. If they keep saying crap like that, it's entirely possible. Just, you know, the man lost. It happens. Let's not be, you know, bringing the supernatural into this. Go ahead, Scott.
I mean, when you say stuff like that, you're grasping at straws. I just don't. I mean, at that point, they're trying to distract from the entire loss itself. And the biggest travesty about this loss is that, with a loss, everybody is still focusing on Fedor, and they aren't focusing on who they should be focusing on, and that's Bigfoot Silva.
Yes, and how fast he is on the ground. That was the most surprising. Look, man that size, and if he hits you, you're going to lose mass. There's no doubt about that, and I think that was obvious going in. What surprised me and really made me a bigger fan of the guy was how fast he can transition with his jiu-jitsu on the ground. That man was a speed demon for the size.
Oh yeah, yeah. He, you know, and I've got to be very, very honest. I've never been an incredible Bigfoot Silva fan. I've never seen him in any fights that wowed me. And I mean, but he looked very good in this fight. Of course, he was also fighting somebody that, you know, he was much bigger than and probably much stronger than. So,
right.
I mean, you know, is it really a telltale? You know, is it really telling of what his, you know, actual skill is? I mean, who knows? I'm sure he gamed. He knew exactly what he was wanting to do with Fedor. But, you know, I was really, really impressed by Bigfoot Silva. And, you know, a lot of people are, you know, they've called him the dark horse. You know, of course, anybody that isn't Alistair Overeem or Fedor Emelianenko, of course, is the dark horse to win this tournament. And, you know, because now they're talking about, you know, Sergey as, you know, potentially being a dark horse as well, though I really don't think so. It's just, you know, I think it is... That is probably his coming out fight. And same for Werdum. You know, when Werdum, submitted Fedor, I mean, this is really their coming out parties. And
right.
It's a shame that the focus is on Fedor.
Right. But that speaks to, and I want to transition into this. Friday night was the Strikeforce Challengers 14. And it was highlighted by, main evented by Fancy Pants. Who, if you read my report, I was very excited that Fancy Pants was fighting. But he was taking on Pat Healy. And then besides that, now, if you don't know who Fancy Pants is, and you don't know who Pat Healy is, and why would you? Because they don't promote anybody except for Dan Henderson in this promotion and Fedor. So they have this fight, and they treat the whole show like it's a second-class citizen. But the big name on this fight, if you don't know anything about MMA, is Ryan Couture. They have Randy's son is fighting in this thing. He's the second or third to last match. you would think that as a promotion, if you're trying to attract people, if you know, if you're trying to build an audience and bring more people into MMA and not just take the audience that's already there from the UFC, but actually bring more people into the sport, you would get a guy like, you know, like Couture out there, even, you know, 1-0, I understand that, but that's a name and that's how you promote. And this has been my biggest problem, because I love Strikeforce. I really do. People have accused me on the boards of not liking the promotion. It's the exact opposite. I love Strikeforce. I don't want to see it go down in, you know, Elite XC flames. So I get very frustrated when I listen to Scott Coker talk, and I don't like to play, you know, Monday morning CEO. You know, I'm a behavior health expert in health insurance. I'm not going to pretend to be a CEO or a marketing guy. But for God's sakes, people were going on the 401 last night going, there's a show tonight? Now, come on. that's terrible. But he was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, and this is about a half an hour interview that I cut down to about 6 minutes. Because I just want to highlight his answers to where this promotion is going, what they're doing for the next couple of months. And keep this in mind for those of you listening out there. Again, 323-657-0901 if you want to call in. In January, Dana White announced almost every main event that was happening for the first half of this year. So we know everybody that's fighting, at least in main events, provided they don't get hurt, all the way up through UFC 131 with Lesnar versus Dos Santos. They've got venues, they've got main events. Some of the cards are already completely nailed down. I think they finally nailed down the second one, which is Kenny Florian debuting in featherweight on that show. Let's compare this now to Scott Coker and Strikeforce.
Okay, now we need you to break some news for us here, Scott, because everyone wants to know. You announced on Saturday, April 9th, that's the next two fights. That's the date.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know where.
Yeah. Well, we don't have anything announced today.
Oh,
actually,
come on.
Japan?
Japan?
No, there's nothing solid. There's nothing guaranteed. So, when you know...
Where would you put your money? If you were me, Japan, U.S., maybe Canada?
Oh, Canada, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think that...
But it's got the announcement has to come pretty soon, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to come within the next week.
So you're looking at March 5th?
We're talking to...
We're talking to Japan,
you know that. We're talking to several states here.
Can you give us a couple hints? We just want to plan our travel.
Texas and Georgia.
Texas and Georgia. Interesting. You've never gone to Georgia.
Nope, never gone to Georgia. And then we're also talking to a friendly promoter up in Canada as well.
Really? Mm-hmm. Which part?
Well, there's one in Montreal, Quebec City.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from Montreal.
Oh, yeah?
They love their MMA over there.
They love their MMA
that
over there.
That would be brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of our...
I could go home and visit my parents.
I think that we'll be there before the end of the year for sure.
Really?
Either way.
Showtime has a good relationship with Quebec City. They ran that Bernard Hopkins fight over there.
That's right.
Is that really a possibility?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
I think that, you know, MMA fans in Canada are, you know, as passionate as any of the fans here. Mm-hmm. And even more, and even then, you know, then some, I think, because it just seems like they're really hungry for it.
They are.
And it was nice to see... You know, GSP come down, support one of his guys. And
Vitor Belfort as well?
Vitor Belfort was there and, you know, Frankie Edgar. So, you know.
Who's number one? Who's the front runner right now to host that?
The event?
Yeah.
That's an announcement we have to make at the end of the week.
Can't tell us.
Well, you know what? Until it's done, I don't want to say. Because, you know, then everybody says, you guys couldn't pull it off. It's not a matter of pull it off. It's really a business decision.
Right.
You know, it really comes down to economics at this point.
Your next big show is on March 5th. You have the Challengers show this Friday in Austin.
That's right.
And then April 9th after that. Any idea what's coming after or not yet?
I think after the April 9th, I think you'll see the June fight with Gina.
Okay.
And
perhaps it'd kind of be too quick to have the rest of the tournament then, right? Because if the guys...
Yeah, no. Yeah, we got to give the guys time to rest. But
nothing in May?
May... Showtime has a very busy boxing schedule.
Oh, right, yeah.
We got the Pacquiao fight, and then there's, I believe, a Cotto fight.
Right.
And then they have a fight in Puerto Rico or something like that. But they're very busy in boxing as well. So I think in May we'll probably let my staff rest a couple
That's
days.
Good. Yeah, they need the rest. All right. Kung Lee, any idea when he's coming back?
Kung Lee's in China filming a movie with Quentin Tarantino right now, and he'll be back at the end of...
Oh, that was
middle of March is what I was told. So you might have another movie right back to back. Who knows?
So no idea right
no
now.
No ideas. But, you know, if the way it's looking right now, it's going to be probably the summertime.
Gilbert Melendez.
We're looking for him to fight April 9th.
April 9th against Kaujiri?
We're trying to put that fight together, yeah.
Yeah, regardless of where it happens, right?
Regardless of where it happens.
It doesn't have to happen in Japan.
It could happen, it could be in your backyard if you want.
That would be fantastic.
Let's do it.
And Josh Thompson, Aoki? Is that a possibility?
You know what? I know Dream is trying to put their tournament together.
Yeah.
And so maybe we'll send Josh as our representative.
Okay, but that won't happen on April 9th.
No. Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen Chris Cyborg for a while.
Yeah, you'll see her before the summer.
Yeah.
I think maybe summertime, but...
not April 9th or anything like that.
No, April 9th, no.
It's pretty packed.
Yeah, it's pretty packed.
Musasi, Mike Heil, is that happening?
No, that's not confirmed.
It's not confirmed.
No.
Well, I'm trying to confirm it with you.
Mike's still his hand's still injured.
Okay. Musasi told me that's the fight that's happening.
Yeah, you know what?
Maybe
we should call Giger.
Yeah,
I should tell him what's going on.
Josh, get Giger and Musasi on the phone. Okay. what about Mayhem?
I believe we'll fight sometime before the summertime, and we're talking to him about a few things actually.
Why was he taken off that March 5th card?
He was never scheduled officially on that card, so that was one of the conversations we had.
King Mo,
he'll be back. Return of the King.
Return of the King. I
like
that.
Return of the King. I want to say, I think he'll be ready by June.
Okay, still rehabbing.
Still rehabbing.
Right.
But June will be a big card because we'll have Carano and we'll have King Mao. We'll have him. It's going to be a huge card.
Jared Shaw.
Yes.
What about...
I didn't see him at the fight.
I know. I told him he should come. This is a good chance to make it. He's from Jersey.
Right. But I'm not sure why he wasn't there.
No.
Yeah.
So
he missed some good fights.
He's not coming back?
I guess not.
Well, I saw Jerry Millen backstage.
Yeah, Jerry.
And he's no longer with them once. That means that he's cool with you.
I heard he got an AOL pass or something.
No,
AOL
pass.
No Yahoo?
You're trying to...
Yahoo?
No? Is he coming back?
No, Jerry just, he wanted to come check out the fights. And, Jerry and I have known each other a long time when he was working for Pride. I was working for K1. And he was at the Manny Pacquiao press conference in L.A. and said, hey, I want to come to New York and check out the fights. I said, come on down.
Last one. I ask you about this guy all the time. Mm-hmm. You always tell me you're interested, but you don't give me any kind of real date. Dave Bautista, is he coming?
I believe... Well, he's not signed yet.
He's not signed yet.
No, he's not signed yet. So.
But what do you believe? You were just about to say something.
Yeah. I believe he'll be fighting for us by late summer.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Herschel?
Boy, Herschel looked great in the last show. God,
that's not what I asked.
He looked fantastic.
Yeah.
Herschel puts his whole life on hold.
Mm-hmm.
He has several businesses that he's trying to... keep going and run and operate. And, he's got one business that has, 800 to 1,000 employees. So it's quite a sacrifice for him to come and fight in MMA. But
does that mean he's going to fight Bautista?
No.
I knew that story already. I'm trying to get the news story here.
No, but there's nothing scheduled for Herschel.
Okay.
He came to the fight
because
he just wanted to be there as a fan.
Right, right.
And
plus, old stomping grounds as well. Giant Stadium.
That's
right across the street.
New Jersey Generals.
Yeah.
1984. Right? Donald Trump was his boss.
That is true.
But, I think that Herschel, if he wanted to do it, of course we'd do it again. Because I think the guy's growing. He's getting better and better and better. And all those months in the gym, I think definitely made him, improve and become a better MMA fighter. And he respects the sport. I think he's been great for the sport. So we definitely have him back. But that's something he's got to decide on his own.
Right.
But he told me, he said next week he's going to go back and start training at AK next week.
Wow.
Just to train.
For the hell of it.
Gotta love it.
That was about 6 minutes of Scott Coker telling us that they've got no location for their April event, and they've got a card in June. They're not sure who's on it, and he's not really sure who's coming back or when. Guys... am I off the mark here, or is this how you run a railroad?
Well, unfortunately, that is that almost seems like the modus operandi for almost every Scott Coker interview that I've heard. There doesn't seem to be a lot of planning, and when their biggest fish to fry right now, from my point of view, is they have committed a lot to this heavyweight Grand Prix. And they are now stuck, it seems. They're talking about, you know, having, you know, I'm guessing that they probably want Barnett to fight in Japan, and presumably so he doesn't have to go through a drug test. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that seems like their logic behind it. Yeah, when you're talking about fights in April, though, where, you know, you're mentioning guys that you're going to be seeing, but you don't have any opponents named, you know, you aren't even sure.
Yeah, and one of them's your champion.
Yeah, what, you know, where are you going with this? You know, and that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the sad part about this Challengers series is because, you know, the question is okay, you know, and, you know, to the people that don't know, I'm going to ruin it, Fancy Pants, you know, lost to Pat Healy. But, like, if he'd won, one of my big questions is, well, okay, how does he then transition to the next step? You know, or is there a next step? You know, Fancy Pants has had some really good fights, you know. At what point do you say, okay, you know, maybe you are now, you can be considered a contender, or you're, you know, to quote Dana White, you're in the mix. You know, is there any type of formula for that? And unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be. I mean, they, you know,
they're making a movie on Fancy Pants. And the only reason why I know they're making a movie on Fancy Pants is because I went to his website and I friended him on Facebook. You would think that that's a guy that they would be out in front of with cameras, following around, putting them on talk shows. But
well, he's not sponsored by M1. he's not managed by them, so that's why you don't hear about him. And it's so unfortunate. I mean, they just, Strikeforce has so many good fighters, and, you know, are they, you know, and we always, I try to be fair, you know, are they elite level? I mean, are they top of the food chain guys? Not all of them, but you know what? 99% of the fighters aren't, you know, they're not these, you know, top of the food chain type fighters, but they are very good fighters and they're very exciting and they're worth your time to tune in for, but most people aren't going to because Strikeforce doesn't want to promote them. And it's just, it's really sad and it's unfortunate. And I would love to see Strikeforce just, you know, for lack of a better term, get their shit together. You know, I would love to see them get to the point that they could, you know, maybe not challenge the UFC, but at least have, it could at least put on a consistent, a good enough of a show and, you know, be consistent enough as a promotion to where they could, you know, challenge for some of the market share. And I don't know, maybe
Scott
Coker is just out of the loop. Who knows?
The UFC is able to sell out arenas and get shows on TV with some boring-ass, drizzling, uninteresting cards. If Strikeforce actually marketed their fighters, they would be. I don't want to say they were going to dominate the UFC. That's ridiculous. But they would absolutely. This would be a WWE WCW kind of a thing. It would be, you know, it would be two giants battling it out, you know, to bring more people into the promotion. They don't market their fighters at all. They've got marketable fighters in Nick Diaz. They've got marketable fighters in Fancy Pants. You know. I don't mind them even using Herschel Walker. We've got nothing planned for Herschel Walker. He hangs around the gym. And I mean, that what does that tell you? Go ahead, Sam. Are you about to say something?
Yeah. Well, I think part of the problem is actually Showtime because they call the shots. Make no mistake about it. It's not, for the most part, it's not Scott Coker and it's not M1 unless it's something that, you know, relates to Fedor. It's Showtime and Ken Hirschman, and they see some certain fighters as being marketable enough and fighters they're ready to get behind, and they simply neglect every other fighter. I mean, you just mentioned, like, Fancy Pants. That fight with Jeff Healy last night was awesome. One of the best fighters of the year, actually. And how many people saw that?
Yeah.
You mentioned Ryan Couture. Like, I don't think Ryan Couture is going to turn into, like, a world beater or anything, but, you know, he's an exciting prospect with name value. And the story is there. He's Randy Couture's son. I mean, it couldn't get any easier to promote him. And yet, well, few people know that Randy Couture has a son who actually fights professionally. And Showtime, they like, I wouldn't say they like Nick Diaz because they've had problem with him on press conferences before. And he no-showed a fight back in August of 2009, I want to say. So they've had their problems with him, but Nick Diaz is a draw. I mean, we saw the numbers for his last fight with Cyborg. That fight drew really solid numbers. They obviously like Fedor and Dan Anderson. because he has that UFC recognition going for him. Outside of that, they really have no interest in any other fighter to promote, and which is unfortunate. And they also don't have any interest with the challengers shows, which I think Strikeforce could easily use to build up some prospects, even if few people get to watch them. I mean, if you look at those challenger shows, how many names, you know, how many recognizable names are there anyway? Like Shaolin Hibero, he's fought once for Strikeforce, and he's been under contract for like 18 months at least. Hodger Gracie, until recently, he wasn't fighting that often. So, you know, it's unfortunate because, as Scott said, they have really talented fighters. We just don't get to see them. And they don't even fill up their undercards on Showtime shows, which is even worse because you look at the UFC, one of the things they do really, really well is, you know, show undercard fights on the main card if time allows. And on Strikeforce shows, time always allows because these fights tend to finish very early. And basically, I wouldn't say they have no business doing what they're doing, but there's tremendous room for improvement, and they don't seem to be doing anything. I mean, that interview was with the Coker. What did we learn? Nothing. They don't even have a location for the April show.
Right.
April isn't like 6 weeks, and
yes.
they don't
and
even
it's
have
the second
location.
Leg of their big tournament, which is the only thing
exactly.
they're there. It was that and Gina Carano. It was pretty much what I got out of that interview. It was the only thing they care about.
Right. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention Gina Carano. Gina Carano is somebody Showtime loves, and they want to promote her, absolutely. But, like, Cyborg is their champion. And she's marketable, I think. People like to see her because she just kills people. And she got that fight with Gina, and everybody saw that one. It was, I think, one of the highest-rated fights in Strikeforce history. So you look at all of that. And Strikeforce, when was the last time she fought? I don't even remember. And she doesn't even have a fight lined up. They can't get women to fight her. They don't have anybody in the women's 145-pound division because basically they didn't bother to build any contender up. I mean, you have Erin Tohill, who they wanted forever, but she's kind of a head case. And, like, I don't know, man. It's so frustrating with Grudge. I know it's kind of fashionable to hate on Strikeforce, and I'm not hating, but they do so many things wrong. It's not even funny.
I wanted do just a sort of a station break kind of a thing here. For those that are listening to Block Talk Radio for the first time, you block time out, and you can actually, the show can go for as long as you want it to go, but it only goes live for the time that you block. So we're about 3 minutes out, and there's a few other things that I wanted to get to before we wrap the show. We have to talk about, and I just got the word from the boss, we have to talk about Tito's injury. So, If you're not able to listen to sort of the second hour of the show, as Rush Limbaugh would call it, or fourth hour, come back and check it out on 401mania.com/MMA, where we will post the show, and you'll get all this extra stuff that we're going to talk about in just a second. If you've been able to listen to the show up till now, I want to say thank you for joining us. Next week we will be talking about the UFC on. We'll be previewing the UFC on Versus 3, and we will be reviewing UFC 127 Penn versus Fitch, which we're going to talk about very shortly. Predictions and just kind of preview that card. I also want to talk about whatever happens with the next HD Net card, which is Maximum Fighting Championships 28. But come back and join us for that. Check out the rest of the show, and definitely join us next week when we get into all those subjects. And give us a call, interact with us, ask us questions, whatever it is you want to do. But getting back to Strikeforce, just wrapping this up, it's very frustrating. And I hear you with the Showtime thing. One of the things that he mentioned in the interview, and I kind of contemplated whether or not I wanted to include it in that series of clips, was somebody had asked about Gus Johnson, and one of the things that I do tend to pick on with Strikeforce, with relish, is their commentating team. I can't stand Frank Shamrock. He's awful. Mauro Ranallo doesn't bother me that much. I know he bothers a lot of people, but I hear Mauro Ranallo talk, do his commentary with this Challenger show with Stephen Quadros and Pat Militech, and he sounds fine. He's as over the top as most wrestling announcers, which doesn't really bother me. Kind of reminds me a little bit of a less obnoxious John Madden. But when he gets in there with Gus Johnson and Frank Shamrock, I almost have to put my TV on mute. I mean, for those who are wrestling fans, you'll catch this reference. It's Michael Cole bad. It really is. But they're stuck with Gus Johnson because apparently Showtime likes him. So I hear you when I say when you say Showtime, I think calls a lot of the shots here. But then I have to wonder what is wrong with the Showtime marketing department and the people calling those shots? How do you not? It's common sense that you want to promote these things months in advance so you get people to buy the show. The Pacquiao Shane Mosley press conference is for a May 7th fight. It's February. They still don't have a location for the April 9th show. So it kind of goes to what you're saying about, you know, Strikeforce. Cooks in the kitchen, too many chefs in the kitchen, not enough cooks, that sort of a thing. It seems to be their management style.
I think they're spiraling right now, though. I think Fedor's loss.
Okay.
Well, I think that I don't want to say spiraling down potentially. I'm certain that when they put together this heavyweight Grand Prix, there was like most fans, they expected Fedor would probably make it at least to the second round, most likely to the final. I mean, that had to be their expectation. And I'm certain that in trying to get certain elements of it on pay-per-view and or on Strikeforce and or on Showtime, I should say, they probably told them, Fedor's going to be there. Don't worry. Well, now they have somebody that for the longest time was considered the greatest fighter in the world, and he is now out of this tournament, and so now all these matchups that they wanted to see aren't, really aren't, and so now they're panicking, and it's really. The unfortunate reality is it's classic Strikeforce. They put all their eggs in one basket, and then when it has not worked out,
put all their eggs in one basket and then proceed to trip and fall every time.
Yeah, there is no plan B, and that's unfortunate. And the reality is, and it's unfortunate. They just got to let it play out. They should look at Showtime and say, look, this is a tournament. It's got to play out. You've really got to. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be good fighters. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be good fights. This thing isn't going to be a bust. Yes, Fedor's out. Too bad. However, a star is born. His name is Antonio Bigfoot Silva. And let's go with that.
Right. Why not get him on talk shows and talk about how he overcame giantism? Why not get him, or at least get him on Brazilian TV? Go ahead, Stamer.
Yeah, the worst thing is, you mentioned Bigfoot Silva after that win. I mean, they were in New York, and I think Ariel Helwani mentioned this. They could have easily, given him some press tours, and he could have talked about his wins, get people to know who he is. I mean, he just beat him Fedor. And now, in all likelihood, people would just forget about it because they tuned in to see this Russian indestructible machine kill someone, and he lost. And nobody cares about the winner. I think Scott was talking about that earlier, which is kind of unfortunate. Worse than that, who's their heavyweight champion? Alistair Overeem. I think long-term, it would be wise to market him because he's there to say, Fedor, who knows, maybe he'll retire, maybe not, but it's safe to say he doesn't have many years left. And with his management, his contract issues, you never know. Whereas Alistair Overeem, I mean, yeah, he wanted to wanted to fight in K1, but he won the K1 Grand Prix. And recent rumors say he wasn't even paid. So chances are he's not going to be fighting in Japan anytime soon. So he's here to say he's your heavyweight champion. He's got the looks. People love him. He just won the K1 Grand Prix. You can market that. I mean, buy the footage or whatever and just show them. And he's fighting very soon. And few people, the casual fans, do they even know who Alistair Overeem is? I don't think so. And now he's your favorite to win the tournament. So what if he wins? And people, they've watched him 3 years ago or 4 years ago against Paul Buontello, and then, in May of last year against Brett Rogers. That's it. He's fought just twice for the promotion. And that's even unfortunate. I mean, when people don't know who your heavyweight champion is, it's bad. Compare that to when the UFC had the Brock and Kane fight. I mean, Brock is obviously their biggest draw, but they made sure to market Kane. They played the whole Mexican thing, and, it got on people's nerves, true, but at least they knew who he was. They
brought people out to that show. There were a lot. When I went to go see it in the theater, and it was a heavy Latino population, and they were there. I mean, you usually get a heavy Latino population for a boxing match. Wow, they showed up in droves for this. So you're right, you know, and it worked. Go ahead, Scott.
Absolutely. That's how you do it, because there's always a chance that things don't go according to plan, and the unfortunate thing is that with Strikeforce, it rarely does for some reason. Fedor loses, Dan Anderson loses, Gina Carano loses, and so yeah, you know, it's always better not to put your eggs in one basket, and they kind of do that all the time, and they don't seem to have learned. So,
no.
What can you do?
Scott, did you have any last words on this? Because go ahead, if you do.
No. I mean,
you good? Okay.
I think we've beaten that to death.
Yes, we have. All right, so wrapping up, I quickly want to do some stuff on the UFC, and then we're going to call it a day for this edition of the Ground and Pound Radio, 401's Ground and Pound Radio. So we have UFC 127 coming up this Saturday, Penn versus Fitch, and this has now title implications. Depending on how GSP Jake Shields go, the winner of this will fight the winner of that fight for the welterweight title, as I believe is happening. And running down the card from top to bottom, we've got Penn versus Fitch. We've got Michael Bisping versus Jorge Rivera. George Soteropoulos versus Dennis Seaver. Chris Lytle versus Brian Ebersole. Chris Kamazi versus Kyle Noak on the main card in the Battle of the Tough Alumnus. The preliminary card for ESPN UK is Ross Pearson versus Spencer Fisher. And your preliminaries, which I guess will maybe be on Facebook, who knows. You've got James Tahuna versus Alexander Gustafsson. Nick Ring, another tough alumni, versus Ricky Fukada. Death Clutch practitioner Chris Tuchscher versus Mark Tuchscher. Hunt. Thank you.
Yeah.
lightweight bout between Masej Juzutsku versus Carl Warburton. Anthony Perra versus Tom Blackledge, and Zhang Ziquan versus Jason Reinhardt. Your thoughts on this card, Scott?
Typical overseas card, unfortunately. It's, I mean, it, not. I don't mean to say that in a bad way, but it is the lower end of the card, the lower end of the main card and the prelims, you know, is the UFC's typical, you know, outside the U.S., or outside of Canada type card. I think it's going to be good. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of fights that are going to be good. I don't think there's many people that are giving Seaver a chance over Soteropoulos. You know, that's, you know, Soteropoulos, I think, is just, he's riding a wave right now. He's really just too good. You know, Seaver, you know, looked good in his last bout. Looked good in his last bout, but, you know, I think his last bout was, what, Andre Winner, I believe. Isn't that who we want beat?
Yeah, he choked him out. Andre Winner.
Yeah. I think there's a huge leap between Andre Winner and George Soteropoulos. John Fitch, BJ Penn, I think that's that'll be an interesting bout. That's it would not surprise me to see I wouldn't be surprised to see BJ Penn pull that one out. I think he's going to be much better on the feet than John Fitch.
You think he'll be able to keep it on his feet? Because from what I understand, you know, Fitch ends up becoming a bearskin rug. He just lays all over you.
Yeah. But you know, while Fitch is a strong wrestler, and of course he is going to try to take it to the ground. You know, you've got to look at who has tried to take BJ Penn down before, okay? Now, GSP, of course, has, you know, had great success taking BJ Penn down, but would I put John Fitch on the same level as GSP? No, I wouldn't. I couldn't, you know? And I also think, you know, Fitch would, you know, even if he does get it to the ground, he's going to want to get him up against the cage, and he's going to sit there, and he's going to want to play that game of, you know, where he's going to try to grind out the decision. You know, well, when you grind out that decision, you're really just giving BJ Penn a little bit more time to work against you.
As I recall, this worked very poorly for Diego Sanchez when he tried almost the same game plan.
Well, I mean, different fighters, different skill levels. You know, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, and you're talking about a different weight class there. But I mean, if the BJ comes in that you know smashed Matt Hughes, if that's the same dude that comes in and he can keep this on the feet, I think you're going to see him do to John Fitch what George St. Pierre did, and I think you're going to just see him counterpunch and use a jab and really, you know, probably make Fitch look pretty ugly by the end of the fight.
It'll be interesting to see if BJ can. Go ahead.
Well, I just don't think this is a very good matchup for John Fitch. I mean, you know, I've always been really critical of Fitch because I think he's not a killer. He's one of these guys. He's a point fighter, you know, so almost in the same vein as a Gray Maynard, you know. And I think when you don't go for that finish, when you're not going for that kill, you know, it hurts your marketability. But I think it also, you know, if you're in there with somebody that, you know, BJ Penn has a great, you know, is great off his back. You know, he has a tremendous ground game. And, you know, granted, we haven't seen that a lot. You know, we didn't get to see it against Frank Edgar. But, you know, I think if Fitch tries grinding this fight out, I think BJ will eventually catch him. And that's really only if Fitch can get it to the ground. I think BJ is going to make this a very, very, very difficult fight to him. I'm not counting Fitch out, but you know, I think it's going to be a lot tougher than what many people are bargaining.
I'll give you this. After his last two fights with Frankie Edgar, I don't think BJ Penn. I think you know BJ Penn. I think got to prove to himself and to a lot of people via his striking that you know last year was a bad year and it's never going to happen again. I think he's going to really fight his hardest just to keep it on his feet. And right, I think we're going to see the man that destroyed Cal Uno and ran to the back, a la the reverse Ultimate Warrior. I you know, so it'll be interesting to see what Fitch does when you know when BJ Penn stuffs his takedowns or you know knees him in the face when he goes to shoot, that sort of thing. If he indeed does that, it'd be really weird to see BJ Penn decide he wants to get into a grappling match with this guy. Sam, are your thoughts?
Oh yeah. First of all, I think Scott is right in saying this is the typical underseas card, but it's a typical underseas card with an awesome main event. I mean, if people are kind of down on it, yeah, but think of it this way. When BJ Penn just destroyed Diego Sanchez last year, people were calling for him to move to the welterweight division, and probably the fight everybody wanted to see was BJ Penn against John Fitch because they've seen him against GSP twice, and John Fitch is widely considered to be the second welterweight, so that was the fight everybody wanted to see, and I think it's an awesome fight. In regards to the actual matchup, I think we're looking at a close decision either way. I don't think Penn is finishing Fitch, and I definitely don't think Fitch is finishing Penn, or anyone for that matter, but I think we're looking at like a 29-28 decision, probably going in favor of Fitch. In my opinion, for Penn to have success, he needs to come up very strong in the first round. Fitch is kind of a slow starter, and, you know, if BJ is aggressive and doesn't want to counterpunch the way he did against Frankie Edgar in Abu Dhabi, I think he can go to town in the first round, but then you also need to factor the reach. I mean, I don't think Penn is just going to jab in Fitch's face all night long, and I think Fitch is really good in the clinch. You mentioned shooting. That's not really Fitch's game. That's a problem. I think BJ has enough reflexes to where he can, like, knee him in the face if he catches him shooting in or something. But I think Fitch is going to muscle him early against the fence and grind him out, work some dirty boxing. Nothing too efficient, obviously. And I think BJ is going to tire. But he might take the first round based on striking, and I think he'll stuff the early takedowns. But the more the fight goes into deep waters, I think Fitch is going to pull it off. I don't see him doing much damage. I mean, Scott mentioned BJ off of his back. I think the problem, see, that's one of the problems with Penn is that he's not going to attack off of his back. But what he can do is avoid sustaining damage. I mean, yeah, GSP passed his guard and stuff, but I think GSP's top game is miles ahead of Fitch. Whereas Fitch is content to just hold you down and land short elbows and stuff, and I think he's going to be satisfied doing that because Penn is going to, he's going to tie him up in his guard, avoid damage, and Fitch is just one of, you know, he's going to lay there. And I think we might see some referee stand-ups and stuff, but Penn really needs to be aggressive in the stand-up. I mean, if he catches Fitch with a right, who knows? Yeah, I think he can finish him, but he really needs to be aggressive and make every chance count. Otherwise, I think Fitch eventually gets a few takedowns, especially I think people are a little bit underrating his last performance against Thiago Alves, Fitch, that is. And I thought he looked super good there. He looked faster than he ever did. He was more explosive. His takedowns looked much sharper, and even his striking. So I'm interested in seeing the fight for sure. I think it's going to be a close decision, but I see Fitch pulling it off.
Any thoughts on Matt Hughes training BJ Penn for this fight? Do you think it'll be a play a factor? Do you think it's, you know, it's nice, but it's really not going to matter?
I think it's,
you
know, I'm sorry,
can't
go ahead.
Hurt. Go ahead.
Sam, go ahead.
It can't hurt.
Okay.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Okay. It's nice. It'll add something, but you don't think it'll be a huge factor in who wins and who loses.
Yeah,
well,
okay, go ahead, Scott.
It depends on really what they're doing. You know, Matt Hughes is, if Penn is looking to, right there, that tells me that Penn knows Fitch is going to try to wrestle him down to the ground. That, you know, when you seek out Matt Hughes, you aren't going to him for his, you know, for his striking skills. You're at that point, you're looking to face a wrestler. Hughes is probably one of the most dominant wrestlers ever to fight in the 170-pound division. That tells me that BJ Penn has every, you know, intention of countering that wrestling. That can't
right.
hurt.
Right, and I think it also highlights his mindset, because Penn has always been criticized for sticking in Hawaii, not bringing guys in, training with, like, yes men, similar to Fedor, actually, in that department, where he just trains with the guys he feels comfortable with, and he never pushes himself, no quality training partners. So at least getting Matt Hughes, if nothing else, shows that he's just willing to go to think a little bit outside the box. He's also, I think he trains his boxing with Roger Mayweather, so whether that pays huge dividends or not remains to be seen, but at least it shows that he's super serious about the fight, and because, especially with someone like Penn, where the mental aspect with him is always questioned, his motivation, I think it's good that he's taking this seriously.
All right, my last question on this. Bisping, has this time come and gone? Do you think this is rejuvenation bout for him? Is it just another day at the office? Where does this fight with Jorge Rivera put him in terms of the middleweight division, if anywhere? I'll throw that one to Scott first.
You know, where does it put him in the middleweight division? Well, you know, that's tough to say. You know, where's Jorge Rivera in the middleweight division? Do I consider Michael Bisping, in the top 10 of the UFC's middleweight? The UFC's middleweight. Yeah. It's kind of tough because the guys that we've seen Michael Bisping against, we've never really, it's never, from my point of view, I've never seen anything that's made me say, okay, this guy is he is right on the cusp of being a contender, or, he is in the UFC's top five, middleweights. I have yet to see him in a fight where I was like, this definitely defines Michael Bisping. His win over Chris Leben was good, but, anticlimactic. He mostly, backpedaled the entire fight and, all but said he planned to take it to a decision. His loss to Dan Henderson was, it just showed that was a tactical error on his part, probably a little bit of immaturity as a fighter. His fight with Akiyama, good win. However, now it's kind of just a known fact that Akiyama just, really isn't there as a fighter anymore, isn't the quality middleweight fighter that we once hoped. His loss to Wanderlei Silva was, it was a close loss, but, I thought it was, a fairly solid loss. So where is Michael Bisping? I don't know. I'll tell you this. If he loses to Jorge Rivera, Michael Bisping will probably never see himself in as a contender. A win, that helps, but you got to look at it. Would I think Michael Bisping would beat Chael Sonnen? Would I see him beating Nate Marquardt? Would I see him beating Damian Maia or Yushin Okami? No. I don't see him ever beating any of those guys. So, where's Michael Bisping?
Him as the gatekeeper of the middleweight division.
It's unfortunate, but he's one of those guys that, if you can beat him, then maybe you're one or two fights away from a title shot. But, if you lose to him, at that point, it's like, Jesus, this guy couldn't even beat Bisping. So, it's tough. It's tough. Maybe a good fight for him next. Depending if they can both come out of their next fights, victorious, is Bisping and Brian Stann. If Bisping beats, Jorge, And I don't even know if Brian Stann has a fight coming up yet, you know. But
against Jorge Santiago. No, that's actually a great fight. He's fighting Jorge Santiago, and I think it's appropriate for Bisping to fight either one of them. The winner of that fight, that sounds good.
Yeah. But yeah, that's
Samer, do you have any further thoughts on Michael Bisping?
I think nobody can deny that he's a good fighter, but I think that's what he is, just a good fighter. I think it's not totally beyond the realm of possibility that he earns a title shot. I mean, when you think about it, the middleweight division is A, not that stacked, and B, most top contenders have been stopped by Anderson Silva. So, I agree with Scott that I don't think Michael Bisping beats Yushin Okami. I don't think he beats Chael Sonnen or Vitor Belfort. But, you know, two of them lost to Silva already, and Yushin Okami is going to get that shot. So I think the UFC recognizes that a title shot for Michael Bisping in England could do good business for them there against Anderson Silva or anybody else for that matter. So maybe I'm sorry. So
yeah, you just threw out Chael Sonnen. Both of you mentioned him, and as you said, my first thought was, you know, Chael Sonnen's going to need a welcome back fight, and Michael Bisping beat Jorge Rivera there. I would almost, you know, if I'm Dana White, want to put that match together. Michael Bisping versus Chael Sonnen, winner gets Anderson Silva next.
That would be awesome.
Yushin Okami or whoever the middleweight champion is at the time.
Right. I think that would be awesome, especially because they actually engaged in a war of words like a couple of months ago, and where Sonnen told Bisping, I'll bury you in your place, or, you know, typical Chael Sonnen manner. I think that would be a great fight. I don't think it's a good fight for Bisping, because even though he has good takedown defense and is good of getting off of his back, I think Sonnen is just, you know, he's a really, really good wrestler with great top control, unless he can submit him from the bottom, which... Yeah, Sonnen is kind of prone to those, but I think he can avoid the submissions and earn the decision. But yeah, the fight will be great. The build-up will be good, too. I think Bisping beats Rivera anyway. I think, unless Jorge catches him with like a right or left or whatever, I think Bisping earns a decision.
Is there any match in the lower card here, any one of the first three on the main or the preliminaries, that, you know, is sort of the Kid Yamamoto fight, you know, the one you're like, wow, this isn't very high up on the card, but it's the one that I'm most excited about. There's usually one or two of those in the last couple of cards where I looked at it and I'm like, you know, this is one of those fights that's just an extra treat. Anyone jump out here? You, I'm actually, I always like to see the Ultimate Fighter guys get a shot on the, you know, on the big cards. So I'm kind of looking forward to the Kamazi Kyle Noak fight. Anyone jump out for you, Samer?
The Alexander Gustafsson James Taruna fight, because I think Gustafsson is an awesome prospect that few people know of. I think the UFC kind of threw him a very hard fight when he was paired up against Phil Davis in Abu Dhabi, and he lost that one via either first or second round submission. But outside of that, he's done very well. He completely destroyed Ciryl Diabaty last summer. I think he's an awesome fighter that people need to look out for. I think he beats James Tehuna. So if nothing else, I don't think it's going to be a competitive fight, but just to see Gustafsson's performance, I'm really interested in seeing that one. And outside of that, I don't think the preliminary card is the best the UFC has ever put on. In fact, it's kind of pretty poor. But yeah, that fight kind of sticks out to me.
Anyone for you, Scott?
You know, I've always been a Chris Liddell fan. You know, and I'm actually a little bummed out that you know, the original matchup there isn't going to play out. But I'm one of those guys that I would love to see Chris Liddell being mentioned in the title picture. You know, I think I think he's just one of these veterans. You know, the former, you know, he's still an active firefighter. You know, got a great story, just a super classy guy. You know, was actually on he was on season 4 of The Ultimate Fighter, and you know, he's got a couple of nice wins now in a row, and I think it'd be nice to see him you know, eventually make it to the point where, you know, he is talked about it, you know, in the title picture.
I'm also looking forward to the heavyweight fight, just because I just have a fetish for heavyweights. Anytime I get to see a good heavyweight fight, and since I have a soft spot in my heart for Brock Lesnar, I that follows through on all of his death clutch guys, which is why I rate Colt Conrad so high. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. Looks like, you know, hopefully get an easy win over Mark Hunt, get his win back against Brendan Schaub.
It actually kind of shocks me that I'm seeing Mark Hunt on this, because I was under the impression that Mark Hunt was. His participation at the UFC, you know, wasn't that just them finishing out his contract that was purchased when they purchased the Pride assets? And I thought that there was only one fight left on that contract, and here we are seeing him again, and I'm actually pretty surprised.
Turns out there was two. That's the problem.
Oh, was it? There were two? Okay.
Yeah, and it looks like they're just, you know, it looks like this is almost set up for Chris to get another win, to get another W on his record, so he can, you know, get some higher matchups. I'm looking at Mark Hunt's record, and it's not good. Man
nope.
says it hasn't won an MMA fight since 2006. Yeesh.
Well, you know, to be fair, he was never really, he wasn't an MMA guy. Mark Hunt's a kickboxer, and I mean, really, what has been his motivation to transition to MMA? Probably not much. You know, he's kind of in that point now where he's had so many losses. Clearly, nobody's expecting him to beat Teixeira. You know, he's on the undercard. So, I mean, you know, he's probably just finishing out this little piece of his life. Another good fight, though, that I think is going to be Pearson against Fisher. I think Ross Pearson coming off, his first UFC loss, and I think Spencer Fisher, even though I kind of see him declining a little bit as a fighter, I think that's still going to be a good fight, and I wouldn't surprise me if that was a fight of the night.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about it and you really kind of peel through the card, there's a lot of opportunities for redemption for a lot of these fighters. You know, guys coming off losses, this is an opportunity to get them back into the win column. I mean, I think it's a sleeper card, but it's always the sleeper cards that come out and, wow, that was like one of the best cards of the quarter, the best cards of the season. And I think, you know, Penn versus Fitch really has an opportunity to be that once it concludes. Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I've regarded it as one of the fights that I'm looking forward to around this time. And in previous international televised cards, it's always been I'm watching it because it's on, not because I'm tremendously excited about it. Or as I like to say, I'm not Wazooey. But just real quick, I know I've kept you guys a little longer than we had anticipated. The Fader discussion went long, but I think there's a lot we needed to talk about there. Big news for the UFC Fight Night 24. 411 Mania MMA reported that Tito Ortiz tore his vagina. No, he's out of the fight with Antonio Rogério Nogueira, and Phil Davis has replaced him. He's out due to stitches, according to Dana White. And I have not heard what exactly is stitched other than he hurt himself in training a la Rashad Evans, and that's all we know. Your thoughts, Scott?
He might be, it wouldn't surprise me to see Tito Ortiz in the unemployment line.
You think he'll just get? You don't even think he'll get another shot at this? He'll just get cut?
Wouldn't surprise me at all. Everybody knew that this was going to be an extremely tough fight for him. I would say that had he shown up and looked good, he might have gotten another shot. Dana has pretty much said that this was going to be his last. Last chance, you know, to fight in the UFC. Here we are almost in the 11th hour. You know, it's not right around the corner. They're still able to get a replacement, but, you know, we're coming down to it, and now he's injured again. And I don't think that's going to bode well for Tito.
There's a joke on the wrestling side that whenever somebody gets cut from the WWE, somebody puts in the comment zone, and your new TNA world champion. I'm waiting for that to start on the MMA side, only, you know, it's going to be, and your new Strike Force champion is, you know, Tito Ortiz.
I don't think he could even get that far.
You don't think they'd pick him up?
Oh, I think they'd pick him up. I don't think he'd win.
At this point, I don't think he'd make it to the match.
Well, that is a good point, but should Strike Force pick him up? You know, you got to look at one of those things. It's, you know, you got to look at his history, you know. With the issues that Strikeforce has, the question, you know, Scott Coker would have to ask is this guy a solution, or is he just more of a problem? You know, and that's tough to weigh, you know. Tito is definitely on the downside of his career. He's really the only one that doesn't realize that. And, you know, when issues like this happen, when you are now, when your reliability as a fighter is questioned, it's really tough to market yourself on the, you know, on that other side, on the other side of your career. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if he's, you know, wished, you know, if you know, they hope him well in all his future endeavors.
You know, he's part of that big trio of pre-Ultimate Fighter names that people associate. You know, when you talk to somebody who knows nothing about this, they'll go, "Oh, you watch that Ultimate Fighting stuff? You do Ultimate Fighting?" And they'll go, "Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, Tito Ortiz." Randy Couture is semi-retired and kind of takes the interesting feature fight here and there, but I don't think he's committed to making a championship run of things. Chuck Liddell has retired with grace and has opted to be a lobbyist for the UFC. What the hell is Tito Ortiz thinking? You know, he was just on Inside MMA with, he just had an interview with Michael Schiavello, who's become my favorite announcer in MMA. And he was sitting there, he was like, "No, this is a comeback for me. I've got my life in order. I don't hit my wife. My kids are great. I'm healthy." And I think so. When I read that headline this morning, as I was prepping for the show, my heart really sank for the guy. I don't like to see people embarrass themselves. And I don't like to see people go out on a bad way. I do like to see people retire with grace. And I feel like this is, you know, we were asking the question: Has M1 ruined Fedor's career? Has Fedor ruined Fedor's career? Yeah, never mind Fedor. Let's take a look at Tito Ortiz. Because the man accomplished a lot in his time, but it's stuff like this which the lasting impression everyone's going to get of Tito Ortiz is this is the guy who stubs his foot on the way to the fight and can't fight. Samer, your reaction?
Right. See, that's the big problem with Tito. I mean, so many things have happened to him. He's almost like Charlie Sheen of MMA, whereas every day every day something pops up, whether he hits his wife, whether he pulls out of a fight, whether he's injured, and he's not injured, he has a cracked skull. Who knows with Tito? I mean, the other day he just had a Twitter war with Forrest Griffin, just because Griffin said something along the lines of, regarding his fight with Rich Franklin, he said, "Yeah, I lay on people, I never finish fights, and I always have an injury excuse win or lose. I'm kind of like the new Tito," which was very funny in my opinion. And, Ortiz took exception to that. He criticized Forrest, and then, you know, 2 hours later, it's reported that he's out. Apparently, he had stitches, so it's not like a serious injury or anything. He had stitches, and, I mean, that heals up quickly. It wouldn't shock me to see them have him fight Jason Brills on the Toronto card, because I think that's originally what the opponent who Phil Davis was supposed to fight. So because it's stitches and it's not like a long-term injury or anything, I think he can be back soon. I think they'll give him one more shot. But win or lose, and I know with Tito, even if he wins his next fight, even if they give him a bum and he wins his next fight, he's not going to beat any even B-level light heavyweight at this point in time, I don't think. And, you know, Scott mentioned that even if he goes to Strikeforce, he's not going to beat Dan Henderson. He's not going to beat King Mo Lawal, and I don't think he's going to beat Feijão. So where does Tito go from here? I don't know. He talks about not wanting to retire even if he were to lose his next fight. I can't take that seriously. I mean, he obviously won't. He'll always find places to fight. But at this point in time, Tito Ortiz is one of the few personalities in MMA who really get on my nerves. I can stand the guy. And I think his act has gotten old. We talk about Fedor, but people criticize Fedor for not fighting the best competition. I mean, look at Tito Ortiz's biggest wins. Ken Shamrock, Wanderlei Silva before Silva was any good. Come on. I mean, the guy hasn't won a significant fight or a fight, period, in years.
I was thinking maybe him and Ken Shamrock can take their act on the road.
Right, that would be awesome. Right, Tito versus Shamrock 4. Everybody wants that, right? I don't know.
Have Tito fight Ken Shamrock, and then afterwards he can fight Jens Pulver.
You know, maybe if this works itself out, Bobby Lashley has to fight a Titan Championship fighting 17, I believe, the same night the M1 U.S. Challenge debuts. Got a busy night of live coverage on for 411. But I tell you what, if depending on how this goes, maybe they can put Tito Ortiz versus Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, it'd be a good fight. Have him beat Bautista's first bout.
There you go. There's his in for Strikeforce. Bautista, when you're done making shitty movies, we'll sign you, and your first fight will be at catchweight with Tito Ortiz.
That would be awesome.
Tell Tito he doesn't even have to cut weight, because I'm sure Tito probably walks around at about 240, 235, and, you know, hey, there you go. You can get in the ring, you know, and
You're on the Tim Sylvia training plan. Just show up in your jeans
and
your long
shirt.
Well,
the reality is that between Tito and Bautista, you know, if they brush through and if they brush up against anybody in the crowd, they're probably going to get injured and not be able to fight
right.
anyway. So neither guy might not even make it to the ring. It'll be a TKO before, you know, one guy even gets out of the dressing room. So I don't know.
So it's a no contest due to double injury.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the, you know, and you know, to, look, there are some people who comment on 401 who take this stuff way too seriously. So I say this, I say this with trepidation. But maybe this can be MMA's first false count anywhere fight because they actually can't get to the cage. So let's just let them fight in the dressing room. Whenever they see each other in the parking lot, just let them go. Wherever there's camera.
Exactly. They could have the special referee be Kevin Randleman, and he'll knock himself out too.
It's always good to end a radio show with ultimate silliness. so that's fantastic. I want to remind people that, you know, free MMA is good MMA. And if you've got HDNet, check out Maximum Fighting Championship 28 Supremacy, which is coming to you from River Cree Casino in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Antonio McKee is defending his title, isn't he?
Excuse me?
And that's Antonio McKee's defending his title, isn't he?
Yes, it's the MFC Lightweight Championship between Antonio McKee versus Drew Fickett. You've got the Light Heavyweight Championship between Ryan Jimmo and Dwayne Lewis. Also on the card, Richie Whitson versus Kajan Johnson. Rodney Wallace versus Razak Al-Hassan. Thomas Denny versus Sheldon Westcott. And Robert Washington versus Tyrone Glover. Tyrone Glover, that name sounds familiar to me. No, crickets, got it. Okay. So, I mean, I cover this for 411. I like to do the free TV live coverage, especially for the lesser-known shows. I'm very much against this idea that, if you know, nobody should watch anything but the UFC and everything else is crap. No, it's all good. You never know. You know, a lot of these end in first-round knockouts, which is fantastic, especially when you've got a wife next to you and an infant going, when does this end? We have to go to bed. So, you know, that works out really well for me. But is there anything on this card that jumps out at you guys?
You let me know if that Antonio McKee fight ends in a first-round knockout.
Will do. You'll have to see my coverage on 411.
Oh, no. I'll probably DVR this. I get HDNet, and I DVR a lot of MFC, and I'll DVR some K1. You know, if it looks like it's going to be good, I'll DVR it, and then I'll watch it at my leisure. But, yeah, I've always liked MFC. I think they put on a quality product. Antonio McKee... they actually had him on Inside MMA, and I don't know. He's not the most exciting fighter, but, you know, he's consistent, so to speak. And I think he could lose his title in this bout. He's kind of said that he hasn't been training as much as he probably needs to be, you know, and he's 40 now, I believe. So.
Oy.
I don't know.
Samer, any thoughts on this?
It's a decent card. I mean, I'm interested in the main event. I'm also interested in Rodney Wallace and Razak Al-Hassan. I think Hassan should have been fighting in the main event because I think he beat Dwayne Lewis in their fight. That was a horrible decision, in my opinion. You know, I'm kind of always interested to see Antonio McKee fight, if nothing else, just to hear the post-fight interviews. I think he's the black Chael Sonnen, in a sense, because he's going to come up with most outrageous stuff. He's gold on the mic. Unfortunately, the same doesn't apply in the cage, but he's still a good fighter. I mean, he looked poor against Volkman on his UFC debut, but he's a good fighter. I think it's a good fight. I don't think Fickett beats him. Fickett's a good grappler. I think he can submit him, but McKee has great top control. As long as he gets the fight on the ground, elbow him in the face, I think he'll be fine. That's a good card. I'll definitely be watching it.
Excellent. All right, view from the cheap seats. What do you got going on this week there, Scott?
What am I going on? What do I got going on this week? It's a good thing that you mentioned that, because I'm probably going to have to decide that and start writing it tonight. No, I'm actually.
I think you should write a postmortem on Tito Ortiz.
Well, potentially, maybe I'll come up with top 10 career options for him.
There you go.
I'm going to break down, try to come up with something for take a look at where the BJ Penn John Fitch main event will go. I like to do that for. The week ahead of the pay-per-views, and I'll showcase their three previous fights, and try to you know, hopefully stir up a little discussion to see, you know, who's going to come out of that fight, you know, looking better, who's going to come out worse, you know, where does this fight need to be kept, and that's what I'll focus on this week.
Okay, what's going on with the rear naked column for this week, Mr. Cotty?
Well, two things. Either the Sotteropoulos-Dennis Seaver fight, not actually breaking down the fight because I don't think anybody cares enough, but I didn't think it was the greatest booking decision by the UFC to have a contender like Sotteropoulos face somebody like Seaver who hasn't beaten anybody of real note in the division. So either that, or I think I want to talk about the implications of Fitch Penn in case GSP moves to middleweight. If GSP beats Shields next month or in April, there's a talk that he might fight Anderson Silva, and I think the winner of the Penn-Fitch fight is almost like the uncrowned champion of the division, and I think it's interesting because, you know, if Fitch wins, he's like on this huge unbeaten run in the UFC, save for that one fight with George St. Pierre, and I don't know who he'll face. I mean, Jake Shields would have been coming off a loss to GSP if that happens, so there's nobody for him to face. It's a complicated situation. I know Scott touched on this a little bit in his last column, so I think it will be something similar, as well as talking about the fight a little bit, like, you know, actually breaking down the fight. So either that or the Sotteropoulos thing.
Okay. Some other stuff going on this week for 411 Mania in the MMA zone. We've got, of course, Monday is All the King's Men, which we all participated in, and we're going to be talking about the super fight, potential super fight between Anderson Silva and GSP, so you should all tune in for that. Fact or Fiction this week is The Boss, Larry Zonka, versus Five Quick Rounds author Bill Wannup. And, you know, we'll have the live coverage for this weekend and all the news that's fit to print. So, Scott, you'll be back next week. Samer, you'll be back next week, I hope.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good times.
All right. So, again, at 11 o'clock every Sunday here on blogtalkradio.com, this has been the 411 Ground and Pound radio show. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again next week. Have a good rest of the weekend. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, it's your friend Ryan Reed with Reed and Reed. I'll get you right back to your favorite podcast, but quickly, I want you to know if you're injured in a car accident, slip and fall, or through medical malpractice, you can count on Reed and Reed to be here when you call. You'll speak to me, my wife, or my dad directly on the phone, or you can meet us in person or on Zoom for a free consultation. Visit needreed.com today for more information. And remember, with Reed and Reed, it's like having a lawyer in the family. Needreed.com. Offices, Tampa Bay.
Hey, you, with the shopping cart. It's us, Leafy Greens.
Leafy what?
Greens. Delicious, locally grown leafy green vegetables. I'm romaine. This is arugula.
Hello.
Spinach.
Ahoy.
Escarole and endive.
Bonjour. Right. I put you guys on my sandwiches.
Aww. We're more than just a sandwich layer.
We add crunch to your salads.
Flavor to soups.
And say little je ne sais quoi to your dishes.
That is, if you let us. For meals with personality, look for the Sunny Fresh from Florida logo where you shop.